Let's go back. I want you to hear that again. Hear that part about marriage one more time, because that's extremely important. And see if there's a little bit of a parallel, even in America, within the last, like, 60 years. Let's look at it one more time. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Sheep Get Sheared podcast. I'm your host, Austin Creed. My friends, today we're going to do a little bit of a double whammy. We're going to discuss context, both in the religious sense and in the political sense. And we're going to tie things together that maybe you hadn't thought about in the same sentence. So first we're going to talk about is the protests happening at colleges around the Israel-Palestinian conflict. I'm going to give you some history and whatnot on that. And then we're going to tie it into why context matters both in that sense for the political. And then we're going to tie it in a little bit into relationships later on in the show to discuss why I believe the biblical bachelor lifestyle is the only one that truly works in today's world if you're trying to be a Christian man or just a man of higher virtue. But before I really dive into it, I want to let you know if I'm going to be showing a lot of clips that might get you to react. I'm not trying to be divisive. I'm trying to be forthright, and I'm trying to give you the perspective that maybe you haven't heard yet, and hopefully you're willing to learn something and you keep your mind open and willing to learn something. My friends, we're going to jump into this. I invite you to share your thoughts and your comments. I try to read every comment that ever shows up on this channel. Sometimes it's a little hard to do it, but for the most part, I try to respond, I try to like, I try to heart things that I really agree with, or pin them if I think they're extremely important and relevant. So don't just think I don't read these things. They're extremely important, and I love to hear them, and I'm glad that people feel comfortable enough to discuss. But here's what we're going to do. We're going to go immediately right into the belly of the beast. And by the beast, I mean we're going to go right to Joe Biden. And what we're going to hear is what his thoughts are about protests. Okay. So without further ado, let's listen to Mr. President.
Let me be clear. Peaceful protest in America. Violent protest is not protected. Peaceful protest is. It's a matter of what's right. There's the right to protest, but not the right to cause chaos. There should be no place on any campus, no place in America for anti-Semitism or threats of violence against Jewish students. There is no place for hate speech or violence of any kind, whether it's anti-Semitism, Islamophobia, or discrimination against Arab Americans or Palestinian Americans. It's simply wrong. There's no place for racism in America.
Mr. President, have the protests forced you to reconsider any of the policies with regard to the region?
No. Thank you.
Mr. President, do you think the National Guard should intervene?
No.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. President. Let's look over at the comment section. Comment section ain't going for it. Look at this. The people throwing fireworks at the peaceful protesters in UCLA seem to have been protected. Okay. And then we have, this will lose a lot of support for him. Okay, I don't believe a lot of what the government says because, A, I've been in the government, in the military, and I had top secret clearance, so I saw some things that some of you will probably never see, nor can I discuss because I don't want to go to jail. But what I can tell you is, Reagan was correct when he said that one of the worst things you can hear is, I'm from the government and I'm here to help, because the answer is they are not. And when we look at what Joe Biden is saying, does anybody actually believe him? Because I don't. Number one, he is not picking a side from the sound of it, but he actually is. It's whatever his controllers tell him to do. Now, as you might have surmised, I side with Israel. I always will. Unless, of course, they're actually wrong about something, which so far I have not seen them be wrong about stuff. And when it comes to this conflict, a lot of people, they don't understand the history of it. So we're going to jump into the history of the region, and maybe you didn't know this beforehand. You know, a lot of slogans have been coming out in recent times with, like, for example, from the river to the sea, Zionist racism. Have you heard these things recently? You probably have. You might think that these are new. The answer is they are not new, And I'll show you this right here. In 1960, or the 1960s, the Soviet Union, yes, it was still around back then. It was around until Reagan's presidency when he famously said, tear down this wall. In the 1960s, the Soviet Union initially supported Israel, but later provided military assistance to Egypt and severed the diplomatic ties with Israel in the 1960s, namely 1967. So you might think, well, what does that have to do with anything? Well, we fast forward from 1967 to 1973. They were helping rebuilding the Egyptian and Assyrian armed forces, which then led to the support of the Soviets to the PLO, the Palestinian Liberation Organization, which is the one of the biggest forces in the Black September incident that got a lot of, which is why Jordan and Palestine don't have good relations. Also, the PLO is, in my estimation, this is my opinion, one of the biggest backers for the protests you're seeing on campuses all around. You ever notice why these camps, these occupation areas, have the same tents, have supplies and whatnot? Where do you think that money is coming from? It's a good question, isn't it? Well, let's go down to right here. This is what I want you to see. The Soviet Union's anti-Israel propaganda intensified after Israel's victory in the 1967 Arab-Israeli War. The propaganda, which was sponsored by the Communist Party and the KGB, sound familiar? Alleged that Zionism was a form of racism. It's almost like we hear that slogan today. It was created by the communists in the Soviet Union and disseminated by the KGB. Same thing with From the River to the Sea. It was created for... what's the guy's name? Oh, Yasser Arafat. It was created for Yasser Arafat. Because Yasser Arafat, he was in the spirit of the mustache man from Austria with his policy on Israel. And what he was talking about was he wanted to get rid of the state of Israel. And the Soviet Union said, whoa, hold on a second. You can't go around there saying you want to get rid of these people. No. What you gotta say is, we don't want to get rid of them. We want to create a safe space for us. We want to provide equality for us. You see how they changed the... They taught them in the art of twisting language, in the art of deception, in the art of using nice language to destroy people. And they created these slogans for Yasser Arafat, the leader of the PLO, back in the 1960s, and we now hear them today on college campuses. See, you know how when you add context to this conversation, suddenly it seems a little more nefarious and it makes a little more sense, right? Well, scripture's the same way, and we'll get into that in a second. But before that, we need to understand, let's look at some of these articles right here. See, these are some of the top stories that are happening right now. Some of them are live. Some of them happened a couple hours ago. These protests you're seeing on the screen right here, they're covered by all these the alphabet channels. They are... How many times have you seen what I just read for you about the KGB and the Communist Party of the Soviet Union being behind the creation of these terms and these slogans you're hearing right now on college campuses? Answer, you haven't heard it, most likely. Why? Because then it would hurt their credibility. It would hurt their cause for them to learn that their slogans were created by the KGB, created by the communists in the Soviet Union during the Cold War. But you see, when you hear these people disseminate this kind of propaganda, you don't understand why. A lot of people don't understand where it's coming from, how this is happening. Because no one's giving them the context that I just gave you. And now, this might seem like a sudden shift, but I'm going to leave that right now because I could go on a whole spiel about that, which I don't want to do, because it's going to just go down a rabbit hole that I don't want to go down right now, and it can get very emotional for me, so we're not going to do that. Instead, what we're going to do is we're going to turn this idea of establishing context. Now we're going to pivot from politics to the religion conversation. Let's return to our bread and butter on this show, which is relationships. Now, you might have heard, if you haven't listened to my show, you probably don't know where I'm coming from. But if you have, you likely heard me discuss before in my book, Biblical Bachelor. I discuss how The church today is largely it's a crimson cross. The communists and the KGB had their hand over here in politics, but they're notorious for also not liking religion, which is why a lot of churches lost my respect and a lot of other people's respect during COVID when they shut everything down and they wanted to protect their tax exemption status instead of protecting their right to practice their religion. They would rather have their pastors talk on Zoom than to have people actually show up to church. Now, I'm not saying you should or shouldn't have done that. What I'm saying is it causes a lot of people, including myself, to lose respect for the church leadership. And so when we put this context forward of we have today the current laws, the current politics, the current policies, the current culture, and current philosophies, we have the Bible's account from back in ancient Rome, the New Testament, all the way back to ancient Israel, ironically, in the Old Testament, and we want to pretend like these same exact ideas are cookie cutter, exactly the same, and should it be exactly implemented today as they were in the past. And the problem is that's just not feasible. And to give you an example, I could go on the Old Testament, go on the Talmud and the Torah, but I'm not going to do that. Instead, what we're going to do is we're going to look at this video, which discusses the realities of ancient Rome and women. Because you think that, oh, the world's been kind of like it is now for, or at least it was somewhat different, but not really that different. Well, let's see what happens. Let's listen to this video.
What was life like for women in ancient Rome? Here's some facts. Marriage, for example. Men could divorce from women, but women could not divorce from men at first. Later on, things changed, and during the empire, the women could actually divorce from their husbands. At some point during the empire, it wasn't difficult to find women that went through multiple divorces. Divorce was not something to be ashamed of anymore. About having kids, at some point, women, especially of the upper class, deliberately refused to have kids. Why? Because with so many divorces that went through, kids could become a problem. Also, you need to imagine that childbirth was so much more risky than today. Women could lose their life during a childbirth. The situation for women in the lower classes of society was completely different. So while women of the upper classes discussed politics and read books, they were informed, women of the lower classes of society could get married since the age of 10 years old. Did ancient Roman women demonstrate for their rights? Yes, they did. They took the streets. Actually, they took the Roman Forum. For example, in the 2nd century BC, women went into the Forum and protested against a law that forbid the use of jewelry and other status symbols to women because they were seen as the cause of the decadence of society. Have you ever heard of any of these
See, gentlemen, did you hear that? Did you catch that?
In fact, tell us in the
comments. Hold on, ma'am. Let's go back. I want you to hear that again. Hear that part about marriage one more time, because that's extremely important. And see if there's a little bit of a parallel, even in America, within the last, 60 years. Let's look at it one more time.
Rome. Here's some facts. Marriage, for example. Men could divorce from women, but women could not divorce from men at first. Later on, things changed, and during the empire, the women could actually divorce from their husbands.
See that? And then she proceeds to say that as soon as they gained the ability to do that, divorces became more and more popular. And not only did divorce become more popular, people not having children also decreased. Does that sound familiar to anybody? Yes. Yes, it's extremely familiar. In fact, we're seeing it right now. You see, there's a lot of correlations between Rome and now. But what's interesting is when we look at, for example, what Paul says in the New Testament, when he says that men should love their wives, people don't understand that back in that time, you could basically backhand your wife and get away with it scot-free. She couldn't divorce you, not at that point in time. Later they could, but not during that time when he wrote that. They couldn't divorce you. They couldn't leave you. They were basically subservient to you according to the law. Men were responsible for women in every way. Now, and even that changed in Rome, but when we look at today, what's the difference between what happened in Rome after they allowed women to divorce men? It happened more frequently, which is exactly what we see now. When you look and you see that 70 to 80, sometimes even 90%, if you're an educated woman, They're the ones filing the divorces. 15 years ago, they wouldn't have even accepted this fact. Now, you see women on TikTok discussing that, yes, that's actually a real thing, but for 10 to 15 years, men who were in this space before me, before probably your favorite content creator in the space was here, men were talking about this. Now, they were persecuted then. Now, not only are people confirming this reality, now they're making excuses for it. Oh, it's the men's fault. Oh, it's women don't leave good men. When actually, if you look at objective reality for 2 seconds, women leave good men more than they leave the bad guy, because the bad guy is interesting. The bad guy is exciting. A safe guy, he's not. He's boring. He's a gump. He's henpecked. My friends, I don't take joy in saying this, but when you put proper perspective into the culture, into the society, the scriptures look a little bit different. You realize why they would say that. Now, I'm not saying you shouldn't love your wife now. I'm saying that your love does not mean as much, because back in the day when it was written, the love was optional. The wife had to earn it. She couldn't just bounce and leave you. Versus now, she can. You are now subservient to her, because at any point in time, she can pull a ripcord, take off the assets, take the kids, and leave. And statistically speaking, people do that. It's more normal than you might expect. And a lot of you men have experienced this. You know someone who's experienced this. You've seen people on the internet who've experienced this. And we've all been touched by it in some capacity. But yet we're still told, oh, because you go to church, don't worry, man, just trust God. But where's God in those relationships? I don't think God has necessarily to do with it. I think it's human agency that's the problem here. And so for me to be the problem for wanting to avoid a obvious potential pitfall, why is that a problem? Again, I'm not saying that not only should you not get married, you should go out in the streets and do debaucherous things. What you do is your business. I'm not telling you that you should. I'm telling you that most people are going to do that. So how do we respond to that? How do we adapt to this reality? See, people mistake you addressing an issue for advocating for the issue. Now, I don't advocate for it. I just know what's going to happen. So what do you do? Oh, I could sit here and act like a bunch of pastors, or I could... Let's go to this guy's clip. And we'll look at the comment section and you'll see exactly what I'm talking about. Watch this.
The Bible says that wives are to submit to their husbands, but why do we always stop at that verse? Because scripture also says that husbands are to love their wives and present her back to God without a stain or wrinkle. The world hates on biblical marriage because they think it's oppressive and controlling. How dare you tell us how to act? But in a healthy, godly marriage, a wife is actually going to want to be led by her husband because of how much he loves and cares for her. Let me ask you this, is a life submitted to Jesus bad? Do you feel like you're walking around eggshells with Jesus? Do you feel controlled and manipulated by him? No? Then why do we think marriage, in its proper context, should be any different?
Well, thank you, sir, for that input. Now let's go to the comment section. First comment, a woman. Men always find excuses. All they want to hear the part that they control the wife, that they don't love the wife. Next comment by another woman. Men are not Jesus. They always got an excuse, don't they? They always have an excuse. It's never, oh, you know what? You're right. You know what? He has a good point. I should listen to that. It's always, no, no, somebody else's fault. No, 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 but this, but that, but nothing. He's 100% correct. However, guess what? Look at the women in the comment section. Look at this. They're saying the husband must respect and submit to her. No, that is not what the Bible says at all. And then another woman. Where are these men? Answer, they're all around you. They just don't look like Chad. They don't have Chad money. Answer, they don't look like the guy who broke your heart. That's why we don't see him. He doesn't look like The Rock. He doesn't look like Zac Efron. That's why you don't see him. See, this is the problem, gentlemen. A lot of Christian men, they don't understand the simple philosophy, okay? They think, they make a separation between these are Christian women, these are non-Christian women, these are Islamic women, these are Jewish women, these are Hindu women. Women are women, period. They all have the same instincts, just like you as a man have general instincts that are true almost entirely across the board. All women have hypergamy. All women have this desire to do better, have more, do better, have a better man, have a better mate, be exciting, not be bored. All women have this programming, Okay. Now, whether they choose to actively avoid it is another question. And even if they're doing it right now, there's no guarantee that 5 years from now, she won't give you the "I'm not happy" and leave. There's no guarantee she won't cheat on you. There's no guarantee that any of these things are true. Now, am I saying you shouldn't get married at all? No. If you want to do that, that's your business. Am I going to tell you to do that? Absolutely not. Am I going to advocate for it? Absolutely not. But at the end of the day, this is what you're up against. Let's go back to the comment section. Well, there's one woman here, okay, who actually says that she does. We'll take her word for it. I doubt it, but we'll take her word for it. Wait, look at this. Husbands love your wife even if she is unlovable. What? Oh, I think not. What kind of stupid advice is that? Oh, man. See, this is what you're up against, gentlemen. Is this a slam dunk that you're going to lose? No, but is it in your favor? Not even close. So my friends, this is why we have to provide the context, whether it's for political or for religious reasons. We have to provide context because that will open. It's like the lens of this camera. I can adjust the lens of this camera to go out or in or anything that I want. You must adjust your lenses to see, am I going to zoom out so I can see the whole picture, or am I going to zoom all the way in and only see what I want to see? That's the question you got to ask yourself. Because if the answer is you want a simple solution, then you're not going to find the truth, because the truth in reality resists simplicity. And so many men want a simple solution to, Austin, how can I find a good wife? Austin, where can I find good Christian women? Austin, where can I do these things? I'm sorry, I don't have all the answers, because the answer is not simple. I can't just say, go to your local church, go to a Bible study, go to this Christian community. It's not going to be that simple. It's not. Nothing is that simple. And if it is, you better check that immediately, because I can guarantee you there's something under the surface that you're not seeing. My friends, please feel free to share your comments, your concerns, your criticisms, your story. I'd love to read it if you share it. I'm sure a lot of other men would also love to see it. Women, if you're watching and you made it this far, you haven't clicked off or sent me a mean email or a mean tweet or anything else yet, feel free to comment as well. I'm sure you'll have a lot to say if you watch this video. My friends, in the meantime, I'll leave you with a little bit of wisdom that I was taught once. Think with your head, not with the... Think with your brain, not what's below your belt, because it'll save your life. My friends, you take care of yourselves. I'll see you next time. Peace out.